Thank you. So, yeah, my name is Carrie Mills, and I'm from New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, and I'm excited to be here today to talk about findings from a survey about children that we recently conducted in New York. I have no financial relationships to disclose. Okay, to start, mental health disorders among children represent an important public health challenge. Disorders can result in difficulties at home and with peers and can compromise chances of school success. Untreated problems also can lead to poor outcomes later in life. It's difficult to find data on the prevalence of mental health conditions among children, particularly young children. In developing our survey, we looked for other examples and found several at the national level, but each had limitations relative to our needs. Two didn't include the ages we were interested in, and the third, which is ongoing, the NHIS, uses only a shortened version of a mental health screening tool. Generally, there are extra challenges inherent in surveys concerning children. First, you often can't survey children directly, particularly when they're young. Instead, you interview a parent or guardian, or in some cases, a teacher. Also, children are constantly growing and changing and going through different developmental stages. What's considered appropriate and normal at one age is not necessarily at another, but then also development isn't exactly identical in each child. This adds to the complexity of making a diagnosis in a child. So I've been using the terms both mental health problems as well as emotional and behavioral problems. So briefly, what do we mean by emotional and behavioral problems? These terms, emotional and behavioral problems, are not formal diagnoses. Emotional problems typically describe mood or anxiety disorders, meaning disorders characterized by feelings of intense internal or emotional distress. Behavioral problems generally describe challenging behavior that is outside the norm for a child's age. Oppositional defiant disorder, conduct disorder, and ADHD are some of the more common diagnoses. And together, we'll refer to them as mental health problems for ease, and think of them as serious interferences in the way children typically learn, behave, or handle their emotions. Our research questions are as follows. What's the prevalence of mental health problems among New York City children ages 3 to 12? How does prevalence vary by demographic factor? And does poverty play a big role in the prevalence of emotional and behavioral health problems? The New York City Health Department recently completed the Child Health Emotional Wellness and Development Survey, which is a cross-sectional, random digit dial telephone survey collecting information from over 3,000 New York adult residents with a child 12 or under living in their household. Interviews were weighted to be representative of the age-specific population of New York City, with oversampling of 0 to 5-year-olds to allow for an equal proportion of younger kids as a 6 to 12-year-olds. Surveys were completed by an adult respondent who was sufficiently knowledgeable. And over 90% of the respondents were either the child's mother or father, and another 5% were grandmothers, and the remaining included siblings, aunts, and guardians. The survey was fielded this past spring and summer. Interviews were conducted in English and Spanish interviews represented about 16% of the overall interviews. Okay, so to assess mental health problems, we use the Strengths and Difficulties questionnaire. It's a screening questionnaire with 25 items that assess psychological symptoms and impact. And there are several benefits of the SDQ. One of them is its length. It's short and can be asked in 4 or 5 minutes, making it good for a telephone survey like this. And also, it's tested well with parents because, unlike some screeners that just have negative attributes, the SDQ has both positive and negative attributes. So, for instance, some sample items read from the SDQ would be: child is generally well behaved, usually does what adults request. Child has many worries or often seems worried. Child is helpful if someone is hurt, upset, or feeling ill. Child is constantly fidgeting or squirming. And then the parents respond to each with one of the three response options. Additional study variables included sex, race, ethnicity, household federal poverty level, child's nativity, household composition, and the highest level of education completed in the household. For our analysis, results were weighted to be representative to the New York City population. Prevalence estimates were assessed overall among children and by specified demographic characteristic. We used multivariable logistic regression to assess the influence of poverty controlling for sex and race ethnicity. And all analyses were conducted using SAS callable Sudan. Okay, so first I just want to point out the intersectionality of race, ethnicity, and poverty among children in New York City. This graph shows the weighted distribution of household poverty by race, ethnicity. And household poverty is calculated as a function of total household income and the number of people in the household. So those in the less than 100% group come from households that have incomes below the federal poverty level. So here we see that 15% of white children in New York City live in poverty, and another 15% are low income, defined as households with 100 to 199% of the federal poverty level. And this contrasts with almost 70% of Hispanic children who are either low income or in poverty in New York City. Okay, so moving on to some of the results. Okay, so here are the prevalence estimates of mental health problems. And we can see with the darker bar that 5% of children in New York City have an overall mental health problem. And from the lighter bar, we see that another 5% score in the borderline range. And when we look at each of the four domains, emotional, conduct, hyperactivity, and peer relationship problems, we see that emotional problems have the lowest prevalence while peer relationship problems have the greatest prevalence. And I just want to remind you here, I showed it on a slide earlier, that with the SDQ, you get the overall score and then you get domain-specific scores, and you can get a domain-specific score that is positive or abnormal without having an overall mental health problem score. Okay, and overall, 11% of the children had an impairment due to the impact of their difficulties. So quickly, I'd like to compare our prevalence estimates with those found in the national study that used the abbreviated version of the screening tool we used. So our overall age groups are not identical, but we can look at the prevalence among the 4 to 7-year-olds and 8 to 10-year-olds. And we see that our estimates appear to be consistently larger, though we would have to look further into the data to know if this difference is really significant. Okay, so now I'm going to show prevalence of mental health problems by a few demographic variables. This slide shows the results by sex, and we found that boys were significantly more likely than girls to have overall mental health problems. In fact, they have they have exactly twice the prevalence, and they're also more likely to have peer relationship problems. When we look at prevalence by race, ethnicity, holding the non-Hispanic white group as the referent group, we find that both black and Hispanic children are significantly more likely to have conduct problems, and Hispanic children are also more likely to have overall mental health problems. And looking at prevalence by poverty, we see the greatest differences thus far. Children living in poverty have an overall mental health problem prevalence rate over 4 times higher than the more affluent children. They also have significantly higher emotional problems, conduct problems, and peer relationship problems. The only domain where there's no significant difference is hyperactivity. Our third research question sought to understand the effect of poverty on emotional and behavioral health problems after controlling for variation by sex and race ethnicity. So if we look at the adjusted odds ratios, there's a greater than 4-fold difference in the odds of mental health problems among those living in poverty compared to the higher income group. And the association between poverty and each of the specific domains we saw in the previous slide, emotional conduct and peer relationship problems, also remains significant in the adjusted model, with poverty appearing to have the largest effect on emotional problems. And also of note, neither sex nor race ethnicity is significant in the adjusted model for overall emotional hyperactivity or peer relationship problems. In the adjusted model, both sex and race ethnicity are only still significant for conduct problems. So I'd like to touch on the impact score, which was a measure of impairment of the child resulting from the mental health problem. So we see that close to 60% of children with a mental health problem had an abnormal score that indicated impairment. And further, over half of the children with a borderline score for mental health problems also had an impact score indicating impairment. We found significant variation in impairment among the children. Girls with mental health problems were much less likely than boys to have impairment. Hispanic children were less likely than white children. And children in the low income group, 100 to 199% of the federal poverty level, were less likely to have impairment, but the poverty and high income groups were similar. And given the differences in the impact score by poverty, we wanted to look more closely at the indicator. So visually, we're able to see that for each of the five items that comprise the impairment scale, and that's general distress, home, friends, learning, and leisure impairment, those living in poverty under 100% federal poverty level are more similar to the high income group than the middle income group. And so we see this consistently across domains, and this is something that we're going to look further into because the reasoning isn't quite clear from the data at this stage. Okay, so additionally, we found that there was no difference in overall mental health problems by the child's nativity. However, children in single-parent households were more than three times as likely as those in two-parent households to have a mental health problem. You see that a little over a fifth of children in single-parent households have a mental health problem. Also, children in households with an adult completing high school or less were more than twice as likely as those in households with an adult attending some college or more to have mental health problems. In summary, 5% of children in New York City are estimated to have a mental health problem, and between 5 to 12% are estimated to have a problem in at least one domain-specific category comprising mental health. Over half of the children with a definite or borderline mental health problem had impairment due to the impact of their problems, and the prevalence varies by demographic characteristic, poverty being the largest risk factor. Okay, our study has both strengths and limitations. One limitation is that it was a telephone survey, which can limit involvement. However, the sampling frame included not just landline, but cell phones as well, which, though it makes it much more difficult for the surveyors to do this, really increases representativeness. Another limitation was the reliance on the parent as the only source of information about the child's emotional and behavioral symptoms. So ideally, when even doing screening, but particularly when making a diagnosis, the parent responses would want to be crossed with a teacher or the child, him or herself, to provide a broader assessment. However, this method is not at all feasible for a survey like this one. Strengths of the survey include the use of population representative sample, which allows us to make population estimates. Also, our survey is one of a few that specifically focuses on young children. And third, the screening tool we use, the Strengths and Difficulties Questionnaire, is well validated and has been used internationally and in many settings. And finally, we're able to obtain estimates by subgroup. And also, the Health Department now has funding to support similar surveys on an ongoing basis, and we're hoping that in the future we can combine data with subsequent surveys to obtain more power for additional subgroup analyses. Implications. Young children are experiencing mental health problems in New York City. So we knew this, but now we're able to quantify it. And we see that there's a great disparity in the burden of these problems by poverty. And one thing this means for the New York City Health Department is that we need to ensure that the programs we have that serve young people and their families with mental health problems have the capacity to serve young children specifically. This includes ensuring that mental health professionals are staffing not just middle and high schools, but also elementary schools. Also, in our programs that serve families with at-risk and high-need children, we need to ensure that our outreach and messaging are targeting families needing help with their young children in addition to their older children. I'd like to acknowledge Tammy Kwong for all her hard work on this, and thank you. Yeah, so we do, in the survey we had five race ethnicity groups, so non-Hispanic white, non-Hispanic black, Hispanic, Asian, and then other. And unfortunately for the Asian group, the power doesn't allow us to show the estimates. They're kind of, that we have to suppress them. So we are able to get estimates, but can't show them on a slide necessarily. And again, that's the type of thing that hopefully if we were able to combine 2 years of survey, we would be able to look at the Asian subgroup as well.
And you offered the survey in English and Spanish. I wonder if you offered it in Asian.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, so the health department does, I think, an annual or biannual community health survey of adults. That is like kind of a similar surveillance survey, and that's been ongoing. And that, I believe, is done in Mandarin as well. So this is kind of the first of hopefully many of ongoing sort of surveillance of children sort of in the same way. And given that, and given potential, you know, with funding, ideally we would expand it to include a language to get that group. Right, so to your first question, in the telephone survey, they reported their household income, and then they also, we had a calculation of the number of adults and children in the household, so then we used an algorithm to put them in, to put their federal poverty level. To your second question, there were just five questions for impairment, and sort of similar to the other questions, the parent could answer sort of like a three-level, like yes, no, sort of kind of answer. And through that, we used an algorithm created by Robert Goodman, who is a researcher in the UK who created the Strengths and Difficulties Questionnaire. And so there's an algorithm of cutoff of scoring, so you get 0, 1, or 2 for each of the five questions. So it's, you can have a possibility of 0 to 15, and there's just cut points, recommended cut points of how to score it. Mm-hmm. And that's similar for how each of the domain and overall questions were as well. So there's a total of three options for each of the 25 questions. And oh gosh, let's see, off the top of my head, I don't know, and I wish I did. We actually calculated like a number of different response rates because of kind of the complexity of making these calls. I know that millions of calls have to be made.
Yeah, but because I knew that it's hard, it's getting harder and harder.
Absolutely. It's definitely getting harder and harder. It is not an easy job to do this. And the survey company, has methodologists and statisticians who work to really try to, we had to at one point rebalance in the sampling frame the percentage that came from cell phones and landline phones, because even in the process of conducting the survey, their initial calculations were off about the percentage to use from each. And that's changing so quickly as well. And then the additional problem with cell phones is that, you know, people, they come in and out of service. They also, you can have a cell phone that is from one city but be living in another city in a way that a landline phone is much more geographically specific. And, you know, with the landline phones, you're more likely to, you know, the not good numbers are often fax numbers or things like that. But with a cell phone, the number of out of services, you know, it's a really high percentage. So I can tell you that our if you know of other telephone survey response rates, ours is probably about similar. And so if you know that, they're not as high as you would, you know, brag about or anything.
Okay,
thank you.